are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What up? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, April the 22nd. And that's right, the episode you've all been waiting for, the best five moments of the 1920 Pistons season. We should go back to actually 1920, not 2019-2020. So many to choose from today. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com. Check out my work there. A Pistons fan and follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast during the pandemic, during the shutdown, during the quarantine, during the coronavirus. Take care of yourself. Take care of those that you can take care of as well. And if you got no one to take care of, just stay in your house. Do all the social distancing. All appreciated. Be a hero that you are. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook today talking about the best five moments of the Pistons season. Some honorable mentions as well. So many to talk about that we're going to spill over into the honorable mentions. Later on, Noah Kozlov of Rejecting the Screen is going to talk to us about what is going on with the Rejecting the Screen podcast show. You guys got to be familiar with this. Some great interviews that I was excited to listen to and check it out. And do subscribe, rate, and review that show as part of the Locked On Network, and also subscribe, rate, and review to this show, Locked On Pistons, as well. By the way, I've been thinking about The Last Dance, the Jordan doc, parts 1 and 2 that were on Sunday, and looking forward, of course, to next Sunday, episodes 3 and 4, starting at 9 o'clock. They're going to replay 1 and 2 starting at 7 on ESPN, then the episodes 3 and 4, 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock. Of course, Bad Boys Heavy, Dennis Rodman Heavy, has been teased as part of the promos, so we'll see what goes on there. Isaiah Thomas. I am not like you guys. I'm not worried about how the Pistons are going to be portrayed. I think this is like kind of one of those honest documentaries. They're going to call the Pistons MFers. It's going to be, in my mind, a sign of respect. I'm sure there's going to be some Isaiah Thomas slander, maybe a little bit of snake stuff, but I don't know. It's that's Isaiah, man. I mean, if we don't have those... We can't be blindly loyal and say that, oh, Isaiah's a great guy, you know, or that you don't understand why Jordan hated Isaiah. And I'm not saying Jordan's right. That's just competition, right? That's Isaiah Thomas being one of the alpha males of the league, certainly the alpha male of the Detroit Pistons organization, took them to heights unimaginable before that and really unimaginable since then, despite the 04 team that, you know, was similarly great to the Bad Boys. But since the 04 team, it's like, how could someone come to these Pistons team and take this franchise to those kind of heights? Hard to believe as we sit here in 2020. I think I've already decided that I'm going to be off Twitter on Sunday night, maybe for the rest of these Last Dance things between the LeBron people. And I think that I kind of have a feeling the Pistons Twitter is going to be a little bit too defensive about it, maybe not understanding. The Bulls are the Bulls. Michael Jordan's Michael Jordan. We're not that, you know. And if they had certain issues with the Pistons, I think, like I said, I think it's going to be a sign of respect unless there's something insane that we don't know about or something that gets thrown around there slanderous about the Pistons and all that. But Michael Jordan, I thought it was funny and got to thinking about it a little bit that Jordan's thoughts going into it is that, oh, people are going to hate me after this documentary. People are going to see the real me and hate me. Certainly after episodes 1 and 2, no surprise, nothing from Michael Jordan behind the scenes that would make you think otherwise than what you already thought of him. I think that that's the funny part of it, is that Michael Jordan says people are going to hate me and think a certain thing of me after seeing this. It's like, no, Mike, we already thought all that. Like, we already thought you're not a good dude. Like, we all knew that. So to see it up close and live, and, you know, maybe there's some shocking things later, or maybe his asshole status goes up more and more as time goes on. But like I said, we get it, Mike. Like, we get that you're not a good dude. So interesting to see how this will all come down. Of course, looking forward to episodes 3 and 4 on Sunday. But let's get into the top five moments for the Pistons season. Like I said, all sorts of honorable mentions. We're going to start with the 17 of 34 from three-point land against Atlanta on a random Friday night game that I didn't watch. I don't know why I even wrote that one, but they shot the lights out on a Friday night there. But we'll start the real list with this one. Bruce Brown playing well at point guard on November 2nd in a win against the Brooklyn Nets. This is the same day that Reggie Jackson was announced that he was going to be out for a couple of months. And Bruce Brown has to play point guard, plays 40 minutes, 22-7 in that one for him, 25-20 for Andre Drummond, 24 points for Luke Kennard. And really, as kind of a Bruce Brown guy that I am, and to listen to the slander as he got off to a rough start to his second season this year, this was probably his first good game and a very, very, very good game. I think he had no turnovers as well. But to see him play well, play point guard, and I'm not saying Bruce Brown's the point guard of the future, but just to have him show that he can play with the ball in his hands is something that kind of made me validated a little bit, vindicated, and I still believe that that should be part of his game going forward as a secondary ball handler with this team, in addition to being a defensive bulldog that he could be if he continues to progress on that one. Next best honorable mention, a nice win at home against Indiana in early December to move to 3-0 on the season against the Pacers, 108-101. I was in the good seats drinking wine for this one, had a good night. Blake Griffin with a late three in that one. You remember Blake Griffin. Derrick Rose with a nice finish to the game as well. He played well. Pistons went toe-for-toe with Malcolm Brogdon and the Indiana Pacers and beat them for the third time of the year, 108-101. Of course, we remember the Sunday night game where the Pistons smashed the San Antonio Spurs at home, 132-98. 28 for Christian Wood. Pistons were 52 of 88 from the field, 59.1%. This one, it might surprise you guys that I didn't have it in the top five. I had it as a honorable mention. Beating the Denver Nuggets in overtime on Super Bowl Sunday. On the paper, this looks like one of the best wins for the Pistons, given that Denver's one of the only good teams that they beat all season. But Denver had that hellacious travel experience, if you remember. Had some weather issues getting out of Utah, I believe, and didn't get off the runway till 4 in the morning. Went to Milwaukee and got in at like 8 in the morning there. Lost that night and then had to play after I think they had a day off. They had to play a noon game on Super Bowl Sunday in Detroit. I just kind of knew this was a fraud travel win that the Pistons got. And they still barely did it even at that. And the Pistons came in at 17-33, so it doesn't feel that good when the season's already over. Jamal Murray didn't play, and we knew the Pistons were shot at this point. They would go 2-14 the rest of the way. My last honorable mention is not a moment at all. It's basically just Christian Wood in general. Unfortunately for him, you know, he had great end of the season individually, but this was a hellacious there was no great moments for Christian Wood. I mean, the fact that he had career highs in three of his last four games, that's great. But the Pistons got like beat up and lost all those games. He led the Pistons in scoring in 9 of the last 10 games of the season. And forgive me for talking about the season in the past tense. Who knows? Maybe they will play a couple more games. I doubt it. I think maybe we get some playoffs, but I don't see any way that regular season games are played again, at least for the Pistons anyway. So Wood leads the Pistons in scoring in 9 of the last 10 games. But guess what? They lost all 9 of those games, and they won the one game where he didn't lead them in scoring, and that's a game we're going to talk about in a bit. But let's start off the top five here with the number five best moment of the season, and that's the win on December 14th on the road against the Houston Rockets. Andre Drummond missed this game because of Avocado Gate. I remember that was a tumultuous week for the podcast because I ripped him a little too hard after that, and then I came back and apologized a day or so later. I don't know. Maybe I rescind the apology. I think I went too hard on the ripping and then too hard on the apology. What are you doing? Let's not relive it. But the Pistons lost the next game without Andre Drummond by giving up 133 points to Washington. And that was the first of a five-game losing streak that, for all intents and purposes, ended the Pistons' season. In the Houston game, though, without Drummond and Blake Griffin, as he only scored 2 points and didn't come back after halftime as he struggled, he would play 4 more games the rest of the season. That would be it for him. Blake's final 7 games, by the way, he shot 23% from the field, 11.6% from three-point land, and averaged a 9-4-3. I kid you not, there's like a Reddit post in the Pistons subreddit sometime recently asking, what do you think we can get for Blake Griffin? Nothing. Nothing at all, actually, is what we can get for Blake Griffin. In this big win at Houston, though, 22 points for Luke Kennard, 20 points for Derrick Rose, 16 for Bruce Brown, 15 for Markieff and Tony Snell. Spread it around all the scrubs. 12 of 37 on three-pointers, 32%. So it's not like they blew up from three, which you would expect to be the reason for an NBA team, shorthanded as they were, to knock off a good team like Houston on the road. But that was not the case. They just played well, played inspired ball on a Saturday night on the road in December. Harden with 39 points on 14 of 33 shooting, but yet the Pistons get the win. We're going to continue with the rest of the moments, the top four moments from this season. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on, Noah Kozloff is going to tell us all about rejecting the screen, including a chilling interview. I really got chills listening to the soundbite from an interview with Adam Morrison that you're going to want to hear about a little bit later on. But continuing with the biggest moments in Pistons season this year, I threw this out on the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Give us a follow. And the other end of last week, and had some good responses. Doc Joe Brown comes back with season postponed. I like that one. That's a good one. My buddy Nathan Mueller comes back with finally trading Andre Drummond. And I know he's going tongue-in-cheek, also maybe a little serious. I did consider doing that and just making this whole thing a parody, or maybe having that be the number one moment. But I did not. But thank you, Nathan. Appreciate the feedback. And then I got two of them voting. First from Nick Henkel from Piston Power. He says, the game against Houston in December, I believe it was right after the Avocado game, so don't think Andre was playing, but man, was easily one of the most fun games to watch of the year. Eric Malarkey, that's Pistons fan underscore Pistons underscore fan on Twitter, with a one for Pistons instead of the I. He says, agree with this. We were in Houston for the game, and as fun as it might have been to watch on TV, it was an absolute blast to witness it firsthand. So thanks for the feedback from those guys. That was number five. Moving on to number four, I've got Derrick Rose's two game winners. And this is one that, I don't know, I mean, all five of these moments, I could see them being a decent argument for any of the five of them being in any order. So to each his own. These are just the ones that I kind of threw out there. Don't really know that any of the honorable mentions could jump in there, unless you want to talk about maybe the San Antonio blood, or maybe you're partial to the Denver game. But I really think the five are pretty undeniable. Unless, again, I put the Derrick Rose two game winners together, you could separate them yourself. So there's semantical arguments we could make about this. The first Derrick Rose game winner was 105-103 against New Orleans. And that was, of course, the game that he goes, excuse my English, but I was born to do this here. Except he said the S word there. Good job, Derrick Rose, with the game winner. And, of course, the soundbite getting us on ESPN the next day. All good stuff right there. And he followed up with another game winner, 113-111 against Phoenix. Last win of the season for the Pistons. Actually had two buckets in the final 40 seconds or so. Two drives, a spin and hook over DeAndre Ayton off the switch, and then spun the other way on a drive against Cameron Johnson, the rookie in that one. So that was a nice win there for the Pistons, who, like I said, that was one win in their last, I believe, 10 games. But Derrick Rose provided some good moments for the Pistons this year, in all seriousness, was the bright spot for this team, and was the best player on the Detroit Pistons from start to finish for this season. So Derrick Rose, maybe the MVP of the season for the Detroit Pistons, as hard as that is to believe. So that was my number four moment, a couple of game winners for Derrick Rose. Again, I was born to do this here. That could be your number one moment. I would not argue with that. Number three, I got Sekou Doumbouya's dunk over Tristan Thompson and the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is game four of the Sekou starting stretch. He started the first game of his season against the Clippers. That was the first game of the 2020 portion of the Detroit Pistons season against Kawhi Leonard. Then he also started against the Golden State Warriors, and then LeBron James and the LA Lakers, and then against the Cleveland Cavaliers on the road. All four of these games on the road, and some great stats for Sekou during this stretch. But that dunk over Tristan Thompson, Johnny Kane on the call says Sekou into the lane, and then Greg Kelser, Special K, comes in and goes, there's a finish for you. So a nice call from those guys as Sekou with his highlight, single play highlight of the season, the number three moment in the Pistons season. Now, I'm being a little bit loose with the term moment, too. Some of these are games. Some of these are moments. I get that. We play a little fast and loose here with Locked On Pistons. The number two moment of the season, and I just think about the emotions of it. Think about, you know, it was nice when Sekou got that dunk and it helps you like think about the future. But really, what does it mean at that point in the season? The Pistons are in the doghouse. They're all the way to the bottom. Same with Derrick Rose's two game winners. It's like the season's like teetering already at that point, even early on. So that's why I have this moment really high. And that is the opening night victory against the Indiana Pacers on the road, 119-110. They're 1-0. They beat a tough division rival on the road without Blake Griffin. Blake's just going to be back, gone for about 10 days or so. He'll play great the rest of the season after they give him a little rest post-training camp. Of course, we know didn't all work out. Andre Drummond, though, in this game, contract Dre. He's going to play hard all year. He's going to grow up and be a pro all season finally and be an all-star once again and lead this Pistons team back to the playoffs comfortably. Great season coming up for Detroit. 32-23 for him, making some one-on-one moves, although that always felt like fool's gold because of that. You didn't want Andre gaining confidence early in the game because then he was going to try and do too much. He was going to try and do more, and if that was ultimately going to get you nowhere. So you almost wanted Andre to kind of float early and then play well in the second half, but it seemed like he always had a tendency to play really well in the first quarter, develop a bunch of confidence, and then try to do too much late. And then they went away from him too much late when they had bad lineups. It was just a nightmare of a season, and it's torture that we have to relive it in this fashion. But 30 points in this game in the opener for Luke Kennard as well. I mean, this is it. This is going to be the breakout season for Luke Kennard. He's going to be healthy. He's going to be productive. He's going to be he's going to step up the defense. 6 of 9 from three in this one. 8 of 13 from the field. Only 28 minutes. Even early on, some discord with the rotation with Luke Kennard and Dwayne Casey. Derrick Rose had 18 points, was very good in the fourth quarter of this game as well. The second biggest moment of the Pistons season. The number one moment of the Detroit Pistons season, though, and this is a full game also, and it's the win against the Boston Celtics. I believe this is late January or mid-January. 106-103. Season's already trash at this point, but I'm just talking about the future of this team. And, of course, if you're an old head like me, anytime you beat the Boston Celtics on the road is a nice win. And again, Pistons go 12 of 32 from three, 37.5% from there. So it wasn't like they just shot the lights out. Although I do remember that I think they shot very well early and maybe a lot of those misses were towards the end of the game. And no Jason Tatum for the Pistons, but no problem. We still love this game. Sekou Doumbouya, 24 points, 10 of 13 from the field, 14-5 in his first 8 starts of the season. And this was the 8th of those, so he had a really good start to his starting campaign. And then he had one more good game the rest of the season pretty much against Denver. The final 23 games, the 23 games after this Boston one, Sekou averaged 5 points and 3 rebounds, 30.8% from the field, 24.2% from 3. So not great, Bob, for Sekou Doumbouya with the finish of his season. A season-high 23 points for Markieff Morris off the bench, 22 points for Derrick Rose, 11 of 13 from the field. Extra nice because, obviously, Derrick Rose is proving to another team that could use him at the trade deadline, so the Pistons won't be dumb enough to keep him at the trade deadline. Certainly, they will trade him and get something for him. So that was a good thought we had that night. 21 points for Sfi Mykhailiuk, including a half-court shot at the end of the third quarter to help pad what was already a nice little lead at that point. And I personally had just talked to Sfi a few days before, and I know I was writing a story about him for the Detroit News. I had called his agent, I believe, that night, had a nice conversation. So I knew in the back of my mind I had a good story coming from him, emailed with his dad a little bit. So this one felt extra good for me that Sfi continued his good play while I knew a story would be coming out by me about him in the next couple days. But at the end of the day, just a singular win in a doldrum of a season. And yeah, the network, we wanted to talk about the five biggest moments of the season for your team, and so we had to do that this week for the Pistons. Maybe other shows are stretching all five of these out to giant shows and all that kind of stuff, but we're just going to talk more about the past here on Locked On Pistons as opposed to the present. But the future, though, that's why we had this game listed so high, is because Sekou was showing what he could possibly be with those 24 points, cutting to the lane, going out in transition, all that good stuff that we've seen from him during that short stretch this season. But other things to keep in mind and look forward to is subscribing, rating, and reviewing the Rejecting the Screen podcast with Noah and Adam. Those guys do a great job. You should listen to that. And you're going to have an excerpt of that show with some of the highlights from their recent past coming up next year on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day.
Hey, it's Noah Kozlov from Rejecting the Screen on the Locked On Podcast Network. Adam Stenko and I get together twice a week to talk hoops with folks who have touched the NBA on all sorts of levels, from all-stars, coaches, executives, and media members. Recently, the number 3 pick in the 2006 NBA draft, Adam Morrison, joined us to tell a story about how Kobe Bryant, his former Lakers teammate with whom he won 2 rings, went above and beyond to lift his spirits.
It was a year after I was out, and so I wasn't playing, obviously, and I was really depressed, and I was basically a hermit in my own house, and I didn't go out in the community at all. And you know, if you did, it was one of people asking you, why aren't you playing? And I was, you know, I'm 26 at the time or whatever I was, and, you know, number 3 pick, and just really low point in my life. And I get a text from Robert Lara, the Lakers security, and it was Kobe's, like, one of his best friends, and he said, hey, what's your address? I got something in the mail for you. And I get the package, and it's an autographed jersey from Didier Drogba, who is my favorite player. I'm a Chelsea fan. You know, it's from Kobe. And game-worn jersey, you know, signed Didier Drogba, to Adam, best wishes. And I always thought Kobe, you know, made a phone call, which is, would be fine. It's still cool as shit. It's unbelievable. The night he passed, I'm scrolling through, reading everything, and I'm emotional. And on Chelsea's, you know, Instagram page, it's him with Didier Drogba holding up a jersey, and it says, to Adam, best wishes. So he went up to my favorite player, got it signed for me without me even asking, and sent it to me when he knew I was low. That's what Kobe Bryant was, man. He was just one of those dudes who understood his own aura.
When 4-time All-Star Sean Marion hung out with us, not only did he tell us that he tried to recruit Kobe Bryant to the Suns the summer that the Suns ended up signing Steve Nash and Quentin Richardson, he also told us that his 2006 Suns team should have won the title. In the 2011 preseason, his Mavericks teammate Jason Terry was so confident they'd win it all, he got a tattoo of the trophy.
We was at Deshaun Stevenson's house. We had a game in Orlando, and we went to his house, and a few of the team, and we was over having bar eating and stuff, and then this tattoo guy came over there, and Jet guy tattooed a trophy on his bicep. I was like, damn, dude. I was like, for real? I was like, okay. I'm loving it. I'm loving the confidence and the swag we have right now. So, like, let alone, don't nobody else in the world know we doing this and we feeling this right now. Because everybody in the league has aspirations. A lot of teams have aspirations to win championships, but it ain't but maybe a handful that actually can do it. You know what I'm saying? So we was one of those teams. And, like, we sitting there going through this process and looking at this, and, we was like, yeah.
Did he tell you, hey, I'm going to get a tattoo of the trophy? Did you know as it was happening, or once he got it, he showed you, he's got a tattoo of the trophy?
Well, it was called all kind of one sequence. He's like, we won the championship this year. I'm about to get a trophy right now. Okay. We were like, okay, that's what's up.
I mean,
you don't get no better than that. Come on now. You don't get no better than that.
Yeah, it
does. You don't get no better than that.
Kevin Willis never did win a ring, but he was an all-star and was one of the most dominant rebounders of his era. He spent year 16 of his career with the Toronto Raptors when Tracy McGrady was in year 2 and Vince Carter was a rookie. As expected, he had some pretty good advice for those kids.
They used to call me OG, old head, things like that. And I think I was in my 15th year or somewhere up in there. And it was like, yeah, man. I used to tell him and T-Mac, I say, T-Mac, first of all, you need to stop falling asleep on the bench and practice. You got to stay awake. You keep falling asleep. I used to tell him and Vince, you guys rather hope that you get the 15 years because you little snot-nosed rookies. But, you know, they were great, great rookies, great talent.
Speaking of vets and rookies, when Suns legend Eddie Johnson got traded to Seattle, Gary Payton was a rookie point guard, and since everyone loves a good one about GP running his mouth, Eddie delivered.
And I remember one day at practice, I was there for about 2 weeks, and I remember he kept disrupting practice. And Gary's a smart guy. He had a right to talk in that regard because as I got to know him, he really knows the game, obviously. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest defenders ever now, but at the time, he was a rookie. And rookies were not supposed to talk under my watch.
Right.
So that's what it was for me. And I just couldn't get over the fact that this rookie kept talking, you know, and I let it go for 2 weeks. And I asked Nate McMillan, I said, is it a point in time, man, when you all like gonna say something to him? And Nate was like, man, you know, you know, Nate kind of shook it off. And I said, well, I'm gonna say something. And lo and behold, one practice, he's got the yapping and, you know, coaches going over stuff and he yapping. And I just finally said, would you shut the F up?
About 15 years later in Seattle, P.J. Carlesimo was coaching the Sonics with rookie Kevin Durant. When P.J. came on the show, he revealed how ahead of the curve his staff was when KD was on the floor.
One good thing we really did with him was we exposed him to a lot of things in terms of we played him at two, we played him at three, we played him at four. We put him in pick and rolls. We encouraged him to shoot threes. It's his only bad three-point percentage. If you look at his percentage year by year in the NBA, it's far and away the lowest one. But again, in those days, it was even a bigger jump from college three to NBA three. And Kevin didn't shoot a lot of threes at Texas. And we had him do that. And at times we were criticized, like, why are they playing this guy at guard? Why are they putting him in pick and rolls? You know, why are they letting him dribble the ball up the court? Because he could.
Staying with coaches, Brendan Haywood won a title with the Mavs in 2011. And when he joined LeBron and the Cavs under David Blatt, it was obvious when a head coaching change was needed.
We could see late in ball games, if he had to draw up plays, we could see he was super nervous, his hands would be shaking. He'd have to give the clipboard to Larry Drew. Larry Drew would draw the plays up. And when you see that, you understand. Like, this dude ain't ready. He's not ready for this. He's not ready for this, and it's not his fault because he thought he was taking on a rebuilding project. And then next thing you know, LeBron James calls up David Blatt and says, I'm coming. And now, instead of taking on a rebuilding project with Kyrie and Deion Waiters at the forefront of it, and Tristan Thompson, you have LeBron James and Kevin Love there, and now you're competing for a title. I think just Coach Blatt got hit with too much too soon, but it was easy to tell right away that Coach Blatt was probably in over his head.
Just like a head coach can lose a team, a woman can tear one apart as well. Butch Beard was an assistant with the Mavericks in the mid-90s as Grammy Award-winning R&B singer Tony Braxton came in between stars Jason Kidd and Jimmy Jackson.
I mean, it ended up being Jason and Jimmy, all right, chasing Tony. Tony's not caring about either one of them. And then the team was taking sides. So I'll never forget, we had a damn team meeting. And I said, guys, it's a woman that's breaking us apart. And if the woman is that good, please, I want to see what her mother looks like. Because I want to date her mother. Come on.
Entertainment and the NBA will always be intertwined. The first to do that on the media side was the New York Post's Peter Vesey, who was also the sideline reporter for the national broadcasts on NBC. We asked Peter about his post-game interview with Karl Malone after the Jazz lost in the finals to the Bulls in 1997. The YouTube clip is titled, Peter Vesey Tries to Get Punched.
Carl was always a great interview. He would never not answer a question. You know, we really didn't get along. I disliked him on many levels, respected him on many other levels as a player, but, you know, he was a dirty player. And the first time that they showed it to me, I didn't even remember it. Okay. So I did this interview. I had no agenda. I was just going to ask him some tough questions, and I didn't care how tough because I really didn't like him. So, but I knew he was going to answer them. so I didn't feel unsafe, and I didn't feel like I was doing something wrong. And it never dawned on me that came off the way it did. You know, my son would say to me, he said, wow, like, what were you thinking? I said, I was just doing my job, but I had no mindset going in other than I knew he was going to answer my question.
In 1997, former head coach Hubie Brown was broadcasting for TNT, but 5 years later was hired by Jerry West mid-season to coach the Memphis Grizzlies. Point guard Earl Watson was in his second year with the team and was thoroughly confused when it all went down.
Jerry West introduced Hubie. I'm 22 years old. We're in Memphis, losing franchise. First time in my life I ever been a part of anything that was losing. So it's all new to me. Just everything was like new to me. It almost made me sick. He introduces Hubie Brown, and I'm thinking, I got to call Bob because we just hired the TNT guy. This is crazy. I didn't know his full resume, right? So the first thing he says to us, he takes the podium and he says, first, I would like to say, you all are fucking losers. None of you are winners. If you was a winner, the other guy wouldn't be packing his stuff with his family. See, you got on fire. You're fucking losers. I'm going to teach you how to be a winner.
The Bob that Earl referred to was Bob Myers, his agent at the time and now the president of the Golden State Warriors. Stories like these are a taste of what rejecting the screen sounds like every week. So we hope you'll join us by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, follow on Spotify, or download and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, thanks again to Noah Kozlov of Rejecting the Screen. Really appreciate him telling us about his show. Again, give him a rate, review, and subscribe. Help out the network. Help us out. Make some scratch. We really appreciate you guys doing that. Two more shows the rest of the week, and they are a two-parter with our 64-man most influential Pistons of all time bracket. Got a special guest to talk to us about those. Still looking for someone to help us out with the rounds to come as we went from Sweet 16 to Elite 8 this week. Those are the next couple episodes. Look out for that. If you want to help me out, get in touch with me at Twitter or also email Matt_Schuch, S-C-H-O-C-H at yahoo.com. If you want to help us out with listening, as listeners helped us pare down the most influential Pistons of all time. But that wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons. I am your host, Matt Schuch. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.